Welcome to the latest edition of City Parents Talk. I'm Anna Richards, Head of Communications and Marketing at City Parents. Today I'm joined by Geraldine Gallagher, who is CEO of the Executive Coaching Consultancy. The global pandemic of COVID-19 has forced a remote working experiment on the largest scale, and like us, Geraldine hopes that the positive outcome of this difficult time might be a growth in acceptance of flexible working. To this end, she's launched a campaign called Change for Good, and she's kindly agreed to talk to me about it today. Geraldine, thank you so much for joining me today. To start us off, please tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hello, and thank you very much, Anna, for inviting me on to talk about something that I feel really quite passionately about, actually, is this Change for Good, to trying to get something positive out of COVID-19, if that's at all possible. So in terms of me, I set up the Executive Coaching Consultancy in 1994. So that is actually 26 years ago. And believe it or not, it was quite innovative at the time. It's very common now to be a coach, but at the time it was people thought that it was way too niche. But I could see there was a real need for one-to-one coaching at that point. It just wasn't being fulfilled at the time. I was head of management development at a big retailer. And I found that most of the time catching up with the managing director of the different businesses was a good way to give them space to think about their own development. And then 15 years ago, we did executive coaching, mainly men actually, for the first 10 years. And then 15 years ago, we innovated again by launching maternity coaching. And we now call that parental transition coaching, obviously. And since then, we've become well known for our work in the diversity and inclusion sphere. And we have a particular focus on gender. So that's a little bit about me.
Brilliant, thank you. And then moving on to the topic and discussion today, tell us a little bit about the campaign. Why did you decide to launch it and why now specifically?
Well, the Change for Good campaign emerged from the themes that our coaches, we've actually got over 60 coaches working internationally and they're still working, fortunately, our clients are continuing to invest in coaching during COVID. And of course, coaching does lend itself to being virtual quite easily. So they're still working and out there, and a lot of them are coaching parents. And what we're finding is we're getting the coaches on weekly Zoom calls to find out the themes that are coming through in those coaching sessions. And Anna, it is so tough for parents. I mean, it is just so tough. I mean, I'm a parent myself, but my child's grown up, so it's not tough at all for me. And this is the thing about COVID. I think it's having such a different impact depending on your personal circumstances. But we certainly can tell that our parents out there, our working parents, are really struggling. And when you think about it, they've got so much to cope with. You know, they're now juggling not just the childcare, juggling it, but they're actually doing the childcare. They're actually educating their children at the same time. And most of them have got two jobs as well that they have to kind of baton change between them. So the stress factors are just enormous. So the thing about it, though, is we're also picking up themes of some good things that are coming out, and hence the Change for Good campaign, because there are certain things about what's happening that they want to maintain when we come out of lockdown. And that's where the idea for Change for Good came about, was to try and capture that. Now, initially, we thought people would email us their stories and we would capture them and then beautifully represent them. But, you know, the world, the way people communicate now is much faster than that. So in actual fact, we've pivoted the campaign slightly so that now what we've provided, based on all the feedback we've got, like a relationship MOT, It's a quiz, actually, and that quiz has 8 questions that you and your partner, you sit down separately. I suggest you have a glass of wine, and those of you that don't, have a coffee or a cup of tea, sit down, fill it out separately, and then compare your answers. And, you know, the idea is that you'll find that you've got a lot in common about the good stuff that's been happening. And also, you know, I'll be honest, I'll be frank, some of it isn't as straightforward and, you know, easy. And actually, there might be some conversations that couples need to have about the way the work is being divided up. And this questionnaire is a trigger for having a meaningful conversation about how things are now and how things could be when we get out of lockdown with regards to how we look after the children, how we do the domestic workload, whose career we prioritise. I'm sure you can imagine that some of these conversations could be quite sparky. But actually, when we've piloted it, had a few people do it, they've found that it's been quite uniting, which is really good to hear.
It sounds like a very simple framework, a way to help couples to take a breath and consider some of these questions when they're running from one task to another so much at the moment. You talked a lot about the stories that you're hearing from couples and people that you're coaching at the moment. Any particular surprising stories or angles that are emerging?
Well, I think the kind of predictable story is probably that quite a lot of women are feeling, they're really feeling the domestic load is falling more to them. And that's a concern for me about gender diversity. In fact, one of the things that our coaches are trying to do is to encourage women who are tempted to actually put on hold their career. I don't mean put on completely on hold. People can't do that. People can't afford to do that. What I mean is maybe if they were going to go that extra mile to be able to make it to managing director or to make it to partner in a law firm, they're thinking, well, okay, this is not the year to do it. And we are just challenging that gently. Because why is it not the year to do it? Because I think that's a potential change, not for good, that might come out of this, which is that we do find more women deprioritising their promotion, not their careers, but their promotions in the short run, which might have a long-term impact. So one of the questions in the quiz is actually to talk about that. Is this a conscious decision to put all our eggs in one basket and promote one career over the other? And if so, you know, we need to talk about it. So that's maybe not surprising. I think the nice side of it is the surprising side is that we've had fathers talking about how this has opened their eyes to how much they enjoy being more a part of the parenting, to actually, you know, be more hands-on. And in fact, they're also seeing, maybe they work in an organisation where presenteeism is still a big issue, but what they're seeing is that actually, you know, they can do the job remotely. And so therefore, I think there's going to be a renewed enthusiasm for pushing for a bit more flexible working after the lockdown.
Absolutely. You talked about presenteeism there, something that our members refer to a lot as well. Are there any other barriers that you've seen to the general acceptance of flexible working in the past that you think may be overcome as a result of this large-scale experiment of flexible working?
Oh, absolutely. The biggest barrier is the technical barrier and generational barrier. There's a generation of people, you know, you've heard about digital immigrants and digital natives. This is a real opportunity for the digital immigrants to actually get up to speed, get conversant with tech. And as they get conversant with it, they'll become much more dependent on it and much more trusting of the fact that you can actually do things from a distance. So I could see quite a lot of the baby boomer generation thinking, actually, this is not so bad. You know, all that trekking into the office. Well, you know, actually, I can have control and I can trust people to get on with things, even though I'm not actually in the same office building as them. So I think that will be one of the hoped for changes. And that's one of the biggest barriers, I think, is that I just think there's a generation of people that genuinely don't get how technology can work. And indeed, in law firms for years have been saying we couldn't possibly, we just cannot be a law firm and not be in an office for security reasons. And overnight, they've had to change that. They've had to rethink all of that. That's got to have an impact going forward.
You talked about trust and control there, two big cultural barriers around this. When you look forward, Geraldine, to the future that you hope might come out of this situation, what are the risks and what are the opportunities that we could grasp from this?
For me, I mean, being quite myopic about my own company's purpose and our focus, for me, the risk is that diversity in all its forms, by the way, not just gender, but diversity and inclusion does go down the strategic totem pole. It falls down in terms of its priority. I'm already concerned about the fact that companies didn't have to report their gender pay gap and the BAME pay gap as well, the ethnicity gap. And so therefore, I'm worried that diversity will slip down the organisational strategic totem pole. And I think there will be winners and losers, or there'll be heroes and villains, as well as winners and losers in all of that. I think those companies that are long-term in their thinking and hold good and hold strong to the principles of believing that diversity actually improves business, that, you know, diverse business is actually good business, I think those companies will win out in the longer term. And I think those companies that take a very short-termist view and, you know, just cut out any ancillary training or investment in those kind of things, I think will really suffer when things do come back, because there's going to be a bit of a war for talent. I mean, the real talented people that are out there, there is going to be a lack of that when we come out of all of this. And I think companies need to be very aware of the fact that at the moment, you know, when you're at home, a lot of people can take calls from headhunters. You know, you're not sitting in an office where people can hear you. So I actually think some of the ones that are not being furloughed, the ones that they're depending on, the really talented ones, are probably just watching some of the moves that their organisations are making. And they're probably thinking to themselves, okay, I've done okay in this, but I wonder what that makes me feel about them as an organisation. So I think companies really have to think about the moves that they're making now. We all appreciate that we have to take short-term action. I mean, otherwise companies will go out of business. But equally, you need to be quite careful about what that action looks like. So, for example, I think it's quite important to have a diversity lens on when you're looking at who you furlough. What you'd hate to find is that the majority of new parents, or more specifically, new mothers or those about to go on maternity leave, you would hate to find that that actually, inadvertently, they become the casualties. Because I think there'll be a bit of a shakeout at the end of all of this. There'll be a bit of a reckoning. And there will be a look and see, well, which of the companies that did actually stick true to some of their espoused principles about diversity, and which are the ones that just chucked them out as soon as the first obstacle, big obstacle, granted, and the ones that forgot all about it. So when I hear about diversity and inclusion people being furloughed, that gives me cause for concern. You know, I think short term I can see it, but really, you know, in the long term, is that a good move for you as a company? And one of the things that we did last year, Anna, is we published a thing called the Parental Fog Index. And what we did was we had someone go through the 100 employers and the Times graduate best employers. We went through those companies and we had someone completely independent of the work that we do and indeed of this situation. And we got them to just go through all 100 websites and rate companies based on how transparent their policies were for parents. So you look online and we had a number of criteria that you had to tick to become what we'd call a beacon, i.e. the very clear, it's called the fog index, you get the analogy. Yeah. So a beacon was really clear and then right through to pretty foggy. And so it was a scale, a rating of 5. And we did all 100 companies to show those companies that were really transparent. And we've just done it again. And actually, we're going to publish that and make that point, because now more than ever, if your talented people are potentially on the lookout for a different company and they are parents like your audience is, then they are going to look on websites and they are going to be looking at those that are transparent about their parental policies. And not just transparent, they're actually generous in their parental policies and progressive.
Very interesting. Thinking from the point of view of our members, I think that will give people a really interesting perspective on different companies and how they look after their working parents. And one question I wonder is, for any parents that felt quite fixed in a particular role or working pattern in the past, if they were to think about approaching their current employer, perhaps a new employer, about a newly flexible arrangement on the back of this time, what advice would you have for an individual wanting to broach those conversations with their employer? How would you suggest they go about that?
Well, the marvellous thing is, in the past, when we did helping individuals to think about how they might broach the subject of flexible working, by the way, we don't push for flexible working, but it's just that a lot of people talk to us who have become new parents about flexible working, as you can imagine. In the past, they had to try and convince their employer that they could do the job, you know, partially from home. And you know, it's not always about working from home. It's about just doing things more flexibly, having more autonomy over your working hours. Whereas now we've got this marvellous experiment where you actually can have results that you can point to. So I would say make sure that you are focusing on output and showing how that output is just being achieved, so that people can experience that actually having you not in the office has meant that you can actually be productive. Now, I'm not being Pollyanna-ish here, because I do recognise that at the moment being very productive is quite hard when you've got a kid and a partner who also has a job and you're juggling. But I think it's really important to focus in on what are the things that count. You've got to look at what the essentials are and focus on them. It's a bit like we talk about focusing on your rocks, you know, not the pebbles and the sand. There's so much sand that comes at you through email, and there are so many pebbles. You've got to really prioritise what are the big things that are going to count and how will they be seen back at the organisation. And then you put together a business case which proves, in fact, that you could still deliver whilst working flexibly.
Absolutely fantastic, Geraldine. Thank you. I love that analogy of the rocks from the pebbles, and I'm sure our members will hugely appreciate your advice there. Thank you so much for taking your time to talk to me today about this issue and for sharing your perspective. And thank you to all of our listeners too. If you'd like to hear more about City Parents, please visit us at cityparents.co.uk or follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter or Facebook. And stay tuned for more from City Parents Talk coming soon. Thank you. Goodbye.